to achieve the stage of a highest Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings who have been your mother. And to this end, think to yourself, I will listen and participate in this discourse. Why have we got together here today? We have gathered here because we think this important thing to learn about happiness or lasting happiness, which material success in this lifetime cannot achieve, which educational skills and qualifications alone will not have achieved. On the one hand, it is totally up to individual freedom to do any practice or not. On the other hand, in a way, we have no option but to undertake some practice.
希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望我们希望
some spiritual practice, let alone the suffering that reoccur across lifetime. When we consider the suffering in this lifetime alone, the suffering of being born, suffering of intermittent sickness, constant aging, and psychological distress, it is quite obvious that one's fame in society, one's power in society, and material successes alone do not answer our question and do not fulfill our quest for lasting happiness.
所以呢，他，真正给定下的，他做个个人的游戏，他做这个心理学的给钱不认识，你去某个人的定律对他写的，他某个写呀，你做给钱就说这个心理学的给钱不认识。So
as a critical thinking person, one has to examine how we can put an end to our problems or to our physical, psychological distress. There are various avenues of spiritual traditions. Which one would be of a benefit to one, and whichever one one thinks would be of a benefit would address one's problem, then one should take advantage of such a tradition.
对，他肯定有，肯定有。另外，他说这个，他说呢，这方面在哪几年呢？他说是可能其他面的，维度呢，下下面的考虑呢，现在没有什么营养，什么蛋呢？他起码见了，嗯，可能是这样。嗯，所以说呢，全部白的。So
since there are various avenues, it would be a personal loss if one didn't do anything, or if didn't attempt to explore various avenues to address one's situation and problem, unless one really wants to remain in the rut of you know, the same experience. When it comes to addressing obvious problems of hunger, thirst, etc., let alone humans, even wildlife in the mountains, in the sea, they are quite capable of addressing these problems.
那这边呢，怎么发生了？他们呢，他曾经给这些个印尼的这些个人说的，说这个他，没在东西写的，他说农民呢，他们当地的农民是念经的，念经的，原来是晓得的。
When we see people who although have a lot of potential to make a big difference to their state of well-being, to their happiness, and yet you know, do not try anything at all, makes one feel sad for them.
嗯，等于说他们这个，真正的那种啊，生活习惯的，嗯，然后是大把开始搞，那把开始就等于生活习惯都养活没了，但是呢，身体都，那的话当，那等于说生活习惯了，没太用，我就讲啊，等于结果嘛，就是，等于说俺就是，等于的话就等于说等于没话习惯了，但是说路多了，等于家里家里没用嘛，是。
So we need to be prepared for the long haul. And to overcome, or to minimize and gradually overcome and achieve a state of a permanent cessation from suffering of a body and mind that we experience in this lifetime will not be achieved in a matter of a week, month, few years. We should be ready for the long term and be prepared to get stuck in the process. For example, to achieve some degree of material comfort and good life, people go through education system for over 20, 30 years. And after that, they achieve you know, great degrees and skills, and that, such skills help them achieve material success and good, which lasts maybe for another 40 years. If people have to put in so much effort and time for the good of 40 odd years, then it is quite obvious that we should be ready to keep doing things in terms of practice in order to achieve lasting happiness that you know reoccurs in all lifetimes. Now speaking from a Buddhist point of view, Buddhism says that all our distress, physical, psychological distress, particularly psychological distress, comes from a mind inside one that is not tamed. Doing a literal translation, It all our suffering emanates from an untamed mind, meaning a mind that is not developed in terms of spiritual evolution. And now, don't take it for face value, and just see for yourself whether that is true or not.
Mm-hmm. 嗯，自动心就落得虚呢。第五个，他那下界个呢，还是见了样呢，他是什么呢？专门的玩用的，这我们不是说的。什么对话
means what is an untamed mind? An untamed mind is a mind that an untamed mind is a mind that has or that perceives a situation diametrically opposed to what it actually is. Not only does it see things diametrically opposed to ground reality, but it really vehemently grasps and believes that such a misperception is true. So once a perception of situation is totally erroneous, and that error in the thinking and the perception then becomes the reason for mistakes to occur, out of which unpleasant outcomes arise. Chö is a Tibetan word, Dharma is the Sanskrit word. Chö means to correct, and therefore some translators have used the word corrective measures. So Dharma means to transform the mind, to refine the mind. And how do we refine the mind? We can't refine the mind simply by praying to somebody out there or by doing rituals so that some inner transformation may take place. Real inner transformation takes place when the mind wakes up to its mistake and then develops a fresh perspective, a perspective that directly challenges the misperception which sees reality or which sees situation diametrically opposed to actual reality. Once we develop a fresh perspective that challenges misconception about reality, then that fresh perspective will overcome, will dispel misconception, and then conviction about nature of reality and situation will take place, and that really brings about changes insight. This is similar to dispelling darkness in the room. You know, if the room is filled with the darkness, but praying that the darkness may go out, will not go out. So simply one has to turn the light on or bring a torch and light a candle. And with the light of the candle and the light of the electricity, darkness automatically comes to an end. In the same way, if there's a darkness of negative thoughts prevailing in the mind, such a darkness of mind has to be removed by cultivating and a counteracting perspective or the antidote. So, for that, we need some faith in the power of a teaching and how teaching, and to see that the teaching of the Buddha is the way that helps develop positive counteracting forces against negative thoughts. And so if one sees following the lines of reasoning, the true nature of reality as is, with that a conviction, incontrovertible conviction, takes place in one's mind, and that conviction will remain unchallenged by any other perspective, because the conviction is grounded in reality, or it is in accordance with the reality. What is real cannot be effaced by any form of explanation or by anything.
사실 저도 지금 신화 선생님 가르고 그래서는 네, 이제 어떻게 가네 제와신네 담반이 쉬고 델라테니 네 맘타신이 용어 지금 저거는 꾸니 용어대 소소 싫어 신주티는 야보지는 소소 요란체가 있나 사실 저도 지금 대화 좀 하는 거 같아서
So we need to develop conviction or faith grounded in wisdom, and what wisdom that understands the true truths, which are said to be, you know, ground reality, conventional and ultimate truths, and with the wisdom, okay, based on one's infallible understanding or precise understanding of the true truths. Then we need to embrace the two parts, the part of wisdom and the part of compassion called resourcefulness. Therefore, when you develop the two parts of wisdom and compassion, ultimately the final outcome would be that you will achieve the true states of enlightenment. The physical state of enlightenment and psychological state of enlightenment. So we need to use our wisdom to do three things: understand the ground reality of true truths, and then work on the two paths. The part of wisdom and compassion, and then to finally reach the true state of a Buddhahood.
당신 남한의 생에 대해 간단히 한 것 같아요. 나중에 보면 이제 간단히 인하냐, 이제 맞다 맞지 비슷하다. 이 그런 게 이제 자주 시도 시도, 또 시지 비슷한 그런 게 이제 또 이제 만나고 이해하는 거죠.
So. What is the ground reality of the true truths? The ground reality of the true truths is that each and every phenomenon presents two aspects. The aspect of nominal function, aspect of nominal function, that is, if things depending on their respective causes and conditions are able to perform functions of producing effects. So such a realm of truth works when critical analysis is not applied to the process of to the process of a nominal function. However, when you apply critical analysis as to what the thing is like, as to what that thing is like, which is able to perform various functions of producing effects, where exactly that thing is, then that thing presents another reality, and the reality of absence of intrinsic entity.
그는 먼저 고소생인데 수수수수 써놨다면 네 수수수수를 용한 영화도 수수수수를 대화한 영화도 아니 수수수 샤워 가르치게 좀 받대 먼저 맞다 맞지 배치게 맞다 맞지 배변에 고소하네 네 내 돈 나오래서
let's think about our own person. So we as a human person, a human being, we have all kinds of experiences in a day, experiences of happiness, joy, experiences of disappointment, frustration, and suffering. And so when we as a person are left to ourselves uncritically and nominally, then such a nominal person, undergoes nominal suffering, nominal happiness, and all kinds of nominal experiences. So the nominal nature of a person who undergoes various experiences is the relative truth or conventional truth. And although the person and their experiences are nothing more than nominal, having nominal entity, yet, you know, yet instinctively, somehow we think our person has a person which actually is nominal, but our misconceived instinct believes somehow the person has some intrinsic independent existence from its own side and not depending on anything else. And then and then when critical analysis is applied to such an entity, to such misconceived entity of intrinsic person, as to where the person is, as to where the person who actually is nominal but believed to be intrinsic, where actually the intrinsic person is. And when you apply in critical analysis, you look for a person among the person's body and mind, which are the basis of affixing the label person. Applying critical analysis, one comes to understand that there's no intrinsic person. There's no person independent of the body and mind. So the person is dependent on various components that go to make person, and component, and the person is therefore nothing more than a dependent entity. And that understanding of the dependent entity of a person is said to be the ultimate nature of person. So, one of the many essential teachings of the Buddha is all phenomena, animate and inanimate, lack any essential intrinsic nature. When asked, why do you say that things have no essential intrinsic nature? Buddha said, because they are dependent arising. They are interdependent on their causes and conditions. So, when one as a Buddhist takes to heart this essential teaching of the Buddha, that no phenomena has any intrinsic essential nature. In fact, things are empty of such nature, therefore emptiness of these. That practice, that training is called training of training in wisdom. So as you train your mind to come to terms with this groundbreaking inner knowledge, in ultimately your mind culminates in what is called Chukku Dharmakaya, or wisdom truth body. Another essential teaching of the Buddha is the development, cultivation, and the development of universal altruism. And a universal altruism where one becomes utterly selfless and one cherishes other beings, other sentient beings, much more than one would cherish oneself. And so this is a second essential teaching of the Buddha. When one takes this teaching of Buddha, selflessness in one's attitude with regard to other beings and develop altruism, you move on the path, ultimately culminating in the development of a physical state of a Buddha, physical state of a Buddha or Rupakaya, where just as where Rupakaya, your physical state becomes spontaneous, inexhaustible fund of incessant service to all sentient beings. And when you achieve that, you naturally find yourself spontaneously reaching out to all beings. So these two essential teachings of the Buddha, the essential teaching of wisdom, which says that no phenomena has any intrinsic nature, challenges that wisdom, challenges underlying misconception, underlying instinctual misconception, and underlying instinctive misconception is called ignorance, because it makes one see things as having true or intrinsic nature. And that is ignorance. And wisdom, with the wisdom, you develop fresh perspective and challenges that. The second essential, that the path of compassion, universal altruism, directly counteracts chronic self-centeredness. Chronic self-centeredness, or the Tibetan word for that is self-cherishing attitude. So these two, dakshin means grasping at or belief that a person has intrinsic intrinsic nature, and self-cherishing attitude, which taught to ourselves that it is doing us good, when in fact it has been nothing but most detrimental to our own happiness and others. So these two paths challenge the two main causes of our suffering. So these lonyi means these two awarenesses, these two perspectives are for emptiness of intrinsic existence and selfless or seamless altruism with regard to all beings is what we need, or are what we need to cultivate. And it is these two that become the central message of a Buddhist teaching called Lamrim, the stages or paths to Buddhahood. And so it's a body of teaching called Lamrim is a practice widely, or has been practiced widely throughout the Buddhist world. So the purpose of Lamrim discourse, whether you give Lamrim discourse or whether you listen to Lamrim discourse, the purpose is to induce the true path, the path of wisdom, understanding emptiness, and the path of seamless altruism, developing universal compassion. So the purpose of a Lamrim teaching is to develop these in us. As I have pointed out, there are two ways to develop these two, the wisdom and compassion. The first one is to gather spiritual resources, or called merit, by undertaking various virtuous actions. And the second one is to meditate on a respective topic pertaining to these two. So we gather merits by doing various practices, such as the seven part or the seven sublime practices. In relation to what we call Chogyixin, merit field. Merit field are an assembly of sublime beings that you visualize before you, their presence. And particularly where you see your guru and the Buddha are seen as inseparable. So there are seven practices. So let's call it seven sublime practices, shall we? Because it has been called seven limb practices, and people develop different ideas about limbs. And so let's call these seven sublime practices. And the first of which is practice, the first of which is prostration and paying homage. I talked about that in the last classes. So here I am giving you some explanation about Buddhist practice and mere exposure. Even mere repeated exposure may not be enough. One really has to put in a great deal of effort on a long-term basis. In the case of the great Indian master Adisha, who traveled from India to Indonesia to study a special branch of Buddhism, particularly about seamless altruism, Adisha, the Indian master, he spent 12 years studying and practicing the approaches to developing universal altruism. So in the same way, not only do we need to have information, we need to cherish the information and then apply the information for a long time. Now, the second of the seven practices called offering. As for offering, mainly there are two branches, two types or divisions. Offering, okay, peerless offering and offering on a non, let's say, peerless offering and non-peerless offering. P-E-E-R, that's what I mean. Non-peerless offering are all kinds of material offering, like offering of water in the water bowls, flowers, light, incense, and so on. Whatever material offering you could make would be considered non-peerless offering. So when it says a non-peerless offering, sounds offering this kind of offering are ordinary, average offering, on the grounds of their being a non-peerless offering. One shouldn't underestimate doing or making these offerings. What is necessary is mepa. Conviction in what you do. I'll tell you the anecdotal case of the great Indian Buddhist king called Ashoka. The Indian king called Ashoka, in one of his previous lifetimes, during the era of another Buddha, Ashoka had been a young child who happened to see that Buddha called Nangzik. That Buddha, you know, going somewhere, and that young child scooped a handful of sand or dust and put in Buddha's alms bowl. He imagined that he was offering pure gold, and he put sand in the Buddha's bowl, but he thought to himself he was offering pure gold. As a result of that, it is said that when he was reborn a human and who became the great powerful king Ashoka, so he had the merit from that act of offering gold. He had the merit of erecting 10 million Buddhist monuments in the Buddhist in that part of India. So there are many such accounts where seeming ordinary things, or giving of seeming ordinary things, can result in immense magical outcomes. In the case of Buddha, you know, Buddha's story called Jataka Tales, and one of the tales talks about how our historical Buddha, when he was on the path, at one time he managed to offer porridge, a bowl of porridge, to one of the Buddhas of the time, and offering a bowl of porridge, then he resolved in the presence of that Buddha to achieve the same state of enlightenment as that Buddha, and that porridge helped him develop a bodhicitta. In the same way, in the case of Lama Tsongkhapa, he, at the time of Buddha, he was a young lad who offered Buddha a crystal bead, rosary to the Buddha, and made a lot of wishes for future successes. You know the story of Indian masters like Naropa, a great accomplished master of ancient Buddhist university in Nalanda. Despite his scholarship and master of Buddhist texts, apparently he had not had developed insight into true nature of reality. So he went on following some guidance. He went in search of his guru called Dalopa, a wandering spiritual mendicant, and he faced tremendous hardships in the course of search for the guru. When they finally met, then his guru demanded the Naropa to offer him, to make an offering of what is called mandala. And Naropa, all that he managed to offer his guru was a pile of mud in the shape of a mandala to the guru. And then with that offering of a mud mandala, it is said that Naropa developed or gained powerful insight into emptiness and so on. So these two great masters, Naropa and Dalopa, met on an empty ground, on a really just a flat ground. And then Naropa said, Dalopa asked, "What do you want from me?" And Naropa, the disciple, accomplished master disciple, said, "I want that spiritual realization, that all kinds of deep insights, spiritual insights that you have, I want those." And then Dalopa said, "If you want that, make me an offering of a mandala." And there was nothing at all. They were, you know, almost in a wasteland with nothing. And now Dalopa said, "Okay, offer me a mud mandala, a mandala of a mud, to make it a sort of a stay on a slate, on a slab of a stone or a slate." He needed water, and there was no water nearby. So Naropa used his own urine to make the clay damp and make it into mandala shape. And he offered a mandala of such a mud to his guru. So then Dalopa, you know, who demanded such a mandala, received the mandala and then threw it in the face of Naropa and covered Naropa's face with the mud which is mixed with his own urine. As soon as Dalopa threw that mud on the face, you know, a dynamic experience occurred. There and then, Naropa developed the kind of concentration on reality which he had sought for so long. It happened
in an instant.
So offerings are powerful ways of gathering resources and merit or energy needed for powerful development or development of powerful realization. All that you may have may be nothing more than one flower or one item of offering. If only you had the will to imagine it into imagined to be fantastic objects of offering, then an offering a single item will go a long way gathering huge merit. Particularly, offering is vital in the practice of Tantra. If you have received Tantric initiations, and then you are required to make thok offering, offering of a thok, to your guru, to your deity, seeing the guru and deity inseparable, and then making offerings to the retinue of our deities who accompany the guru and the main deity. So making offering to the guru and the deity inseparable in the company of a large retinue of other deities is a great way of amassing a huge amount of merit. So when you make offering, you need to remember three things, and three things must be present. And they are, that means the material item. And that nga means a mantra that goes with the material item. And then ding it means concentration. So, for example, when you offer a flower, and the flower itself would be the material item, and what goes in your mind at the time of making flower as a material offering, and who you offer, why you offer, and the great deal of imagination you do in offering. So there would be concentration involved at the time of making offering. And then when you say pushpe or pube, you say pube or pushpe, and then offer. That would be the mantra element of the offering. So that's a brief explanation of Lana Yuebe Choba. That means offerings with the pair, which have pairs. In other words, you know, let's say non-peerless offering. And the second division of offering is called Lana Mebe Choba, peerless offering. And peerless offerings are offerings projected out of deep concentration and wisdom by bodhisattvas on high bodhisattva grounds. However, a Lana Mebe Choba, that is peerless offering, is not exclusive domain of bodhisattva practices. We too can do four forms of peerless offering.
Mm-hmm.
we can make a PLS offering as offerings as spelled out in a discourse, a Buddhist text called Lotu Gyatu Shibeto, Sakaramati Sutra. Sakaramati Sutra, in that sutra, that is Buddhist discourse, Buddha talks of two forms of PLS offering, and that is generating bodhicitta and then resolving to uphold Dharma for the sake of sentient beings. And the third PLS offering is spelled out in White Lotus Sutra. White Lotus Sutra, and that is translating the message you translating discourses you have heard about Buddhist practice into action. Tertin Drupala Jauma. Tertin means the things you have heard, for example, at a teaching, and you apply it to your life and make it real in action. So translating a message you heard at the teaching into action. And the third, rather the fourth, is the fourth PLS offering that we can practice is to feel or to imagine your gezaments of root of virtues, whatever good deed you have done in a practice, and therefore through that good virtuous action you gather a positive propensity or root of virtue. So that is a capital you have, but you can imagine that. You can imagine or you can visualize your root of virtue transforming into any kind of offering that you like to make. That too constitutes PLS offering at our level. Such offerings are possible at our level, and therefore we need to do what we can here, because ultimately we do long for happiness, and the culmination of happiness happens as a result of one's action, and such among many actions, actions of making offering, and offerings go a long way in amassing a great amount of a merit, and therefore merits are vital to gather necessary prerequisites for the development of various tattva, means a spiritual insight into various topics. It is those insights really transform and even transmute your mind into various realizations. So this morning I'll stop here now, and next time Next Sunday, I'd like to talk about mandala offering fairly in detail, because mandala offering is considered another important practice. How many people have had lame wangriban? How many people have had initiation, you know, in highest yoga tantra initiation? How many people? Okay, could you put your hands up, Geshe-la wants to know. Wang Shun Yogi? How many people have had bodhicitta vows? Bodhicitta vows? I ask this question because when we are going to talk about the third sublime practice called Shakpa, it means what's the Shakpa? It's a confession, isn't it? Practice of admitting, acknowledging one's wrong actions in the past and rectify the wrong actions by applying antidote. I thought I would talk about these in detail. So there are quite a few people, or there are some people who haven't had bodhicitta vows and So I want to talk about Bodhisattva vows. As for Bodhisattva vows, anybody can listen to the discourse on Bodhisattva vows. Anybody can, you know, just take for example, take a book on Bodhisattva vows, learn about them, and you don't have to have Bodhicitta vows. You don't need to have taken Bodhisattva vows, or you can learn about them. But with tantric vows, I will not be able to talk about tantric vows, you know, unless people have had tantric vows. So that's that. So I appeal to one and all here to make the best effort, to put the best effort to all kinds of practice that you can do, because now is the time to make a difference. Or else, if we miss this chance, it's going to be really hard, for example, to find another human existence, a human existence which comes in contact with the means to put an end to human misery. So please, take things seriously in terms of your practice, and do things sincerely as well as you can.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's in the yellow book, page 7, and the blue book, page 13. May all beings everywhere, plagued by suffering of body and mind, obtain a notion of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled, with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timed rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all those who are sick and ill quickly be free from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be free. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other.